Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks Podcast. I'm your host, John Lossoff. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So I've been racking my brain all day, fellas.
Really?
Yeah.
About what, Mark?
Well, they're saying that Kurt Russell might be Peter Quill, Star-Lord's dad in the next Guardians of the Galaxy. But so if Chris Pratt is Star-Lord, which is a really lofty title to give yourself, what would Kurt Russell be? Like Galaxy God, Universe Captain?
Star, facial hair Emperor of the Stars.
Mustache, major mustache. Mars. Steve.
Yeah. I think good old Jack Burton would suffice.
Star-Lord. I would love it if Jack Burton was Star-Lord's dad and be like, whoa now. I don't remember that night. I don't remember that night.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy made a lot of 80s references, so it would work, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe.
You're right.
Actually, I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't work. I don't know.
And the Star-Lord and Jack Burton could trade tales about their Jackson Pollock paintings in their respective vehicles. That's gross.
John Lovegood, what would be your galactic alter ego name?
William Shatner.
That's a good one.
That would just be my alter ego name. They're expecting like some 80-year-old like dude who's short and has a belly now, and instead they get me. So they're going to be pleasantly surprised, even more so than when they thought they were going to meet Bill Shatner.
I'd be disappointed.
I mean, my autograph isn't worth as much money.
Right.
Yeah, but you don't take 2-hour breaks at Ruth's Chris while people.
But I don't take 2-hour breaks at steakhouses. That's right.
It's in Chicago. What would your name be, Lazvath? What would your space name be?
I don't know. I've never really put too much thought into it. I guess it'd be...
Really? You never stopped and considered, like, just while you were, like, waiting for a movie to start or something, what your intergalactic name would be?
I would be either...
I haven't.
I would be Steve Balsawood or Chuck Finley.
All right. It's a good blue-collar name.
Chuck Finley is taken. That's a listener who contributes questions.
That's right. All right, so Steve Balsawood. I mean, everyone in Star Wars and Alien and Guardians of the Galaxy, they're all blue collar, so I would fit right in.
Right.
Like Lone Star. Like, hey, where's Steve Balsawood? Like, he could take and terrorize the seven stratospheres.
The seven stratospheres?
Yeah.
All right.
That sounds like it would be like either a metal band or a group of like demigods. Like in Big Trouble in Little China, there were the three storms. Instead of the three storms coming down on like little electricity, like firehouse poles, they'd be the seven stratospheres.
Sounds like a guitar.
they come surfing in on a typhoon.
And then good old Steve Balsawood has to take him out just by sheer pluckiness and blue collar headlocks.
I don't know how this dude has taken out the seven stratospheres.
Listen, Steve Balsawood once got two people in one headlock. So I'm pretty certain he's not worried about seven stratospheres.
Were they like the size of Willow Offgood?
No, they were the size of Mad Mardigan if he was about 6 inches shorter and 30 pounds less.
All right, okay. But like relatively regular size people.
Distinct two indie kids.
Sorry, listeners. But then again, if you're an indie kid, you're probably busy working on one of your 18 blogs than listening to us.
Right. No, I'm talking the real indie kids, like the real ones that are like legit indie kids that chug Four Loko and like actually know, and actually have no money. So they look indie as opposed to like the ones that are faux indie.
They're chugging Four Loko?
Yep.
That stuff will give you a headache.
Yeah.
All right, folks, before you grab your Four Loko, I think it's time we start the podcast like we usually do with listener questions. Mark, I think you got questions for us this week.
Since Christmas is approaching, I reached out to my fellow listeners, the people who like this pod, and, you know, I've asked us questions before. So the first one comes from John Galligan. He's my Viking in Arms brother. And he asks, is Die Hard a Christmas film?
This question inherently offends me.
No, but he says the way he asked this was, he was in a big argument with some people where he thinks it's a Christmas film.
Then I like him.
But
But
there are people. All right. So remember when I wrote the 21st Century Horror post and people were like, Pan's Labyrinth is not a horror film. It is a dark fantasy war thriller with elements of horror. It's like, yeah, well, it's kind of a horror film. You know what I mean? But Die Hard isn't even that kind of argument because it takes place during Christmas. You know, Hans Gruber attacks at this certain time. You have the ho, 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 you know, the Santa thing. You know, it ends with Let It Snow.
Hans Gruber takes hostages when they are in the Nakatomi Tower Christmas party.
Yeah, so, I mean, some people say that it's a movie that takes place during Christmas. But, I mean, it's inherently a Christmas movie. I mean, there are loopholes. There was an argument.
We see that giant teddy bear that he brings for his daughter, like, in five different scenes.
Hey, I'm on your side, Levingood. I'm on your side. I'm just letting you know that there's people out there banging the drum for it, saying it's not a Christmas movie.
But then, if
it's not a Christmas movie, then Home Alone's not a Christmas movie. Because Home Alone, then, is basically a movie about a kid fighting, actually, pretty intelligent thieves.
We'll get to Home Alone in due course, but right now we're talking about Die Hard. And when it comes to Die Hard, anyone who says that Die Hard is not a Christmas film, I have a few things to say. Okay, first, yes, Christmas party when they were taken hostage. And by the way, there's still hostages continuously throughout the movie, which means it's still the Christmas party in my book. So that whole movie takes place during a Christmas party. The second, I mean, you got Al outside. He's saying this isn't the way that he wanted to spend his Christmas when he's talking to John inside. I mean, you got the teddy bear, and then you've got ho ho ho. Now I have a machine gun.
And then doesn't it end with Let It Snow? The movie, isn't there like a Christmas song at the end?
I don't remember.
So, like, I know Reindeer Games takes place during Christmas, but it's not a Christmas movie. But a lot of stuff is based around it being Christmas in Die Hard, so I would call it a Christmas film.
I don't know, like the I do agree that it's a Christmas movie, and I don't think the most common argument for it being a Christmas movie is that it takes place during Christmas. And while that's correct, it's also like not the only reason why. It shares a lot of parallels between other Christmas movies. You know, you have John McClane trying to get back to his wife. That's a major theme.
Literally fighting.
Yeah.
Together with his family.
I think family values. It's like a major theme of Christmas movies. I think, you know, you had the whole thing where Santa comes down the chimney. You have John McClane going down the elevator shaft. Yeah. Like, that's a pretty strong parallel. A
really deliberate parallel.
Yeah. I love it.
And what else here? And, the John McClane giving Hans Gruber the gift at the end of the movie.
Oh yeah, the gift wrap. Yeah, they tape.
Yeah.
What about the scene where they shot all the ornaments and he had to run over it with his bare feet?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the glass. That was the windows.
I know. That was a.
Okay. I didn't even think about what you said. As if you really thought that he was shooting a Christmas tree ornaments or something.
You got to know that John gets so serious about Die Hard and Predator that when you talk about it, like, he's just like, right now there's steam coming out of his ears and like his face is red.
Hold on now. I did a Google search in preparation for this Christmas special podcast of ours, and I searched Christmas movies. And when I searched Christmas movies, it pulls up, you know, like 30 movies, you know, that you can skim through on Google. One of those 30 movies was Die Hard. There are many clearly Christmas holiday movies that weren't up there. They chose Die Hard above hundreds of other Christmas movies.
That's right.
Google said so, people.
Google, no. Lugal said so.
Lugal would say so. Lugal would have put it in the top five.
Yeah. You're right. It would have been 1 through 5.
It would have been Die Hard, Die Hard, Die Hard 2, Die Hard, and Die Hard with a Vengeance. Those would have been the five movies.
Yep.
You know what's great is that, like, I think it's widely accepted now that Die Hard's considered a Christmas movie.
Well, if it wasn't, we just cleared it up for anyone listening. Yeah.
John, put it in the file cabinet. Lazvath, write up a piece of paper and throw it on the ground.
Yeah, it's starting to get full here, actually.
You hear John shuffle later.
Yeah.
By now, we need one of those taller filing cabinets for Lazvath over there.
So thank you, Galligan, for that. And then the next one comes from Chris Kelly, and he says, what are the worst Christmas movies? And for me, this is easy, and it's three films tied. It's Surviving Christmas with Ben Affleck, Christmas with the Cranks with Tim Allen, and Deck the Halls with Matthew Broderick. They are they're the most joyless slogs. They literally wreck your life. Like, they feel like they're about 3 hours long. And I saw a couple of these in the theaters because my family, we would go out and watch holiday movies. And everybody in the theater just sat there not laughing, not doing. And when it ended, everyone was just like depressed. And like, these are the most like, you know, Christmas with the Cranks is about conforming. Surviving Christmas is the most painfully terrible film I've seen. And Deck the Halls, there's a How Did This Get Made episode about it. And Matthew Broderick was on the phone going, my career is wrecked. My career is wrecked. My career is wrecked. My career is wrecked. Like, these are the most joyless, terrible slogs of mass consumption poop I've ever seen as far as Christmas films go. And I've watched all the hokey ones, too. So those are my three. I hate them.
All right. I feel like I'm cheating on this one, but I hate all Christmas movies, just in general.
Like, wait, do you hate Die Hard?
I know I said it's a Christmas movie, but I don't think of it as a Christmas movie. I'm just like, it's a Die Hard, you know? I don't lump it with the other Christmas movies. I don't know why. I hate watching Christmas movies. It's not really my thing, you know?
Well, so you hate watching them, but which one have you hated the most?
Hated the most?
Which one has filled you with vitriol, made you pugnacious?
So I knew this was going to be bad from the start, but I watched it just to say I watched it. But I think the Christmas movie that came out last year with, what's his face, Kirk Cameron, Saving Christmas.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. It was, well, I don't want to spoil it for you. Just watch the movie or watch the trailer. It's very, it was just terrible. I'm just all like, right. Yeah, I'm not down this.
Get out of here, Kirk.
Yeah.
So I listed four movies, and two of them Mark just mentioned, Christmas with the Cranks and Surviving Christmas.
Oh, gosh.
And if I had remembered Deck the Halls, it would have been on my list. But I've got two others that just were soul-crushed. They were just force-fed down the Hollywood pipeline to be released around Christmas time. And one is Four Christmases.
Oh, that's joyless.
Oh, God. They just keep talking about how they want to be just alone as a couple in, like, Maui or Tahiti and... Ugh.
They're a bunch of liars, and they hate their family.
And while the first Santa Claus movie was like, you know, it hit its audience well, and it was cute and cheeky, they made sequels to that, and just the trailers upset me. Those Tim Allen trailers for the Santa Claus parts 2 and 3, like, hold on, Tim Allen Santa Claus. There are additional statutes in this contract. There are additional clauses that you did not see.
Did he go, huh?
That's what I did.
Yeah. Wait, and there's another one. Oh, Fred Claus. That one is really
– I almost listed that, except like I comfortably can say I really, really, really didn't like it, but like it didn't make me angry. Like, did Fred Claus make you angry? I mean, it was not good. It was all sorts of not good. If you paid to see that in theaters, I'd say maybe you have a right to be upset, but I'd also say shame on you for paying for that in theaters.
Yeah, I watched it in Korea. I think I downloaded it. I don't do that anymore. Yeah, that was not fun. But you know what? I think – you know what's weird? I think of all the movies when they're bad that annoy me the most – like, I've watched a lot of bad horror, a lot of bad comedy, but the movies that when they're bad, they feel like a slog and terrible are the Christmas movies. I think when Christmas movies are bad, they are the worst of almost any genre.
Well, I think that you get the tropes of the genre, which, you know, okay, any movie will get that. You get the idiosyncrasies of the actors, which, again, any movie will get that. But you also, on top of that, unlike most movies, you are then force-fed, like, this to-do list of Christmas tropes.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it hits its extra level of badness when the movie is missing the mark, is that you have to deal with, like, there's always, like, in a drama, there's always some scene where someone is drinking in order to tolerate the family over the holidays, and they make a big to-do over the fact that they have to drink. And they almost narrate it, like, oh, I'm just drinking all these alcoholic beverages to tolerate all these in-laws. Like, you know, you just have to suffer through it.
I've actually seen that before.
No, it's just it was in Krampus, which we're going to talk about. But, I mean, I liked Krampus. But, I mean, it's in all these movies. And, yeah. And like, again, like, I like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, but there's the scene when things aren't going well, and he just takes his little moose glass and plunges it into his eggnog punch bowl and just, like, power slams a few cups. Like, there are these things that they're, like, on the to-do list if you're making an obligatory Christmas movie. And, you know, they're all slammed in there, an annoying in-law. And so if the movie isn't really done well, these things become more unacceptably, blaringly annoying.
Yeah, because it's just so familiar.
Right, you know, because, I mean, any genre, you have all these problems that go with it, but when it's a Christmas movie, you're cramming that extra layer of horrible into it.
It's like a turducken of bad comedy. So, yeah, cool. I think the answers were great, and let's jump into the topic.
Nice. All right, let me get.
So, that's we've been talking a lot about Christmas movies. This is our Christmas podcast special, and we are going to be talking about obviously nothing but Christmas movies. And because I love horror, I wanted to start out talking about Christmas horror movies, one in particular. But, I mean, really, there are a lot of, like, Christmas horror movies out there. I mean, you got Rare Exports on the newer side, Silent Night, Deadly Night, and the new remake of it. Black Christmas from the 70s and its remake, Elves, Gremlins, like, there's a lot out there. And recently there's like 89 Krampus movies released this year because there was one go picture for theaters by the guy who did Trick or Treat, Michael Dougherty. He did Krampus. And so I wanted to talk a bit about Krampus. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when this was, like, announced, when I first started reading buzz about this, I would have rolled my eyes, but because the guy behind Trick or Treat was doing it, I was super excited.
No, and so was I. I love the idea. I like the folklore. You know, when I heard Adam Scott, Tony Collette, David Koechner, who was from Cheap Thrills. I know Anchorman, but he was so good in that. Like, I liked the cast, and I liked the idea. And so, no, I was definitely on board for this movie. I was very excited for it.
And all of them have done some level of sort of horror. Like, Conchita Farrell from Two and a Half Men, she's borderline because she did Edward Scissorhands, which happens to also be a Christmas movie. But like, all these guys have done horror. Like, in David Koechner, I love him in Final Destination 5. Toni Collette was in Fright Night and The Sixth Sense. So, like, all these people have some good experience in either horror and or comedy.
Wasn't Adam Scott in a Hellraiser film?
He was in Hellraiser Part 4, which I actually liked, Bloodline. And he was in Piranha 3D.
That's right. So they're all horror veterans.
Nice set. But, I mean, this movie, like, I think I can comfortably say that if you liked the style of Trick or Treat, even though this is not an anthology film.
Well, so what's the style? What's the style of Trick or Treat?
Well, so Trick or Treat is an anthology film where the stories are linked. It's told almost as if it's one story, but you're clearly breaking into the separate stories of the anthology.
But it also had like a kind of it had like a little bit of a mean streak going to it too. Like, it wasn't, it had some balls to it.
It did. It had some mean streak, but it had plenty of cheekiness in there with it. Yeah. Like, so it was mean at times, but there were plenty of times wrapped around the mean scenes where you just kind of draw a smile. The werewolves in that were attractive women that literally unzipped their human skin to reveal the werewolf underneath. So there were some clever things about it.
Yeah.
But I think that this movie is made for people who liked that style. I mean, you could say that this movie, Krampus, like a lot of people like to say this knows what it is and it's a fun movie, and I agree. At the same time, though, there is some almost like a social commentary of mean-spiritedness, of like all the things that we've forgotten as a society, like the time of togetherness and forgiveness and giving and love. In the opening sequence, it shows like this kind of Black Friday-esque riot of people like running and literally trampling each other, fighting, tearing products apart in the store, like kids crying, kids fighting in front of the Santa. And like, while this is kind of cheeky and it'll draw a smile, this is a very negative statement about society. And a lot of the relationships with the family that we're introduced to, they're really unfortunate. Like, I hope that people don't relate to them too much.
So this is going to sound crazy, but those opening scenes of, you know, Black Friday and all the terribleness, I thought that was like almost too over the head. And then when compared to the later scenes with like the grandma's flashback, I felt like it was a little bit manipulative. So I would have loved it if like they would have been watching it on like news reports of it, and they could have used that budget from those massive days into more like creature design and like set design, like for that, because it was only a $15 million movie and I loved it. But I just didn't really buy into those scenes too much. Like, I got what he was saying, but I don't know, I liked it more about like the family and what they were going through, as opposed to like an overly, you know, on the nose suggestion of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like what was being presented, but the way it was presented, if you actually just watched those opening scenes that have none of the real main characters in it, you wouldn't realize that it was a part of this Krampus movie. If you just saw the Krampus movie without those scenes and then just saw those scenes by themselves, they look like they were made by different people.
Yeah. I just kept thinking about like the budgetary constraints, and like, you know, he had like $15 million and he stretched every ounce of that because it looks beautiful for a $15 million movie. But like, I just would have loved like another, because those scenes probably cost, you know, $1 million. So, I mean, imagine like the more practical effects you could have come up with that, you know, but and then we'll kind of talk about the grandma's flashback later and how they compare. But I have to say they were really well shot. I just didn't know if they were entirely necessary. So sorry to bomb you with that. I just kind of like.
No, that's fair. And you could probably cut those scenes almost entirely out, because almost all those notions are present once we meet the family.
Yeah, he could have been watching it on TV. You know what I mean? Like,
and Adam Scott could just make a few cynical comments and David Koechner could just join him and like.
Yeah. Or like he has a black eye from the night before. They were late coming to the house because they were black Christmas shop or black. Christmas shopping. You know what I mean? Like, actually. Wait, why were people going crazy at the mall? It wasn't Black Friday.
No, I just called it that to make reference to the riots.
So people are just going crazy shopping on like the 23rd, right?
Oh, I don't know. Think of Jingle All the Way. Like, there's the one.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're right.
One or something, and so everyone's going nuts over it. But in the scene, they make it seem like every damn teddy bear is the best thing ever, and people are going to tear it apart like it's a Romero movie.
Yeah,
like just pulling out its stuffing guts.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, once we got to the house, what'd you think of the family, the core family?
Well, you know, it's like they introduced, like I said, the same things that we see in those initial kind of montage scenes. I mean, they're letting us know that you know, family values have been totally cast aside in lieu of rude comments and sharp tongue jabs and these obligatory gatherings where you invite the family member you don't like so you don't get guilted for it, but you tell everyone else in the room when they're not there that you wish that they weren't there. Like, it again, this is like where that subtle, like, mean-spirited undertone kind of lies. Conchata Ferrell is going straight to the liquor, and it's like she's brandishing her alcohol-filled mug like a sword in that 81 Excalibur movie. Like, it's very in your face that this is going on, and the siblings are judging each other and the in-laws are competing with each other. And
yeah,
so again, we see all these things, but I like the way it's delivered. I mean, Adam Scott and David Koechner, especially their exchanges, I enjoyed.
So it's Adam Scott, Tomi Collette, their two kids, and it's David Koechner, Alison Tolman, and their four kids. Of course, they forget the baby in the car. And then it's their drunk aunt all in one house.
Right. And just like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, David Koechner is clearly the less educated one.
And then you got the fat kids.
And he's got the fat, just indignant kids. And he brings the dog without asking permission. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like all this stuff gets – and they bring a family member that really isn't very welcome, and even though they weren't very welcome to begin with.
And then Adam Scott has his fancy cardigan. You know, he's just kind of a rich guy who travels a lot. Toni Collette apparently does a lot of Vicodin. And then,
yeah, in almost every movie ever since About a Boy.
And then you have the sister on the cell phone, and then the little brother he's like straight up fist fighting people in the beginning because they don't believe in Christmas. Like, he's an angry little child, but then he's really sensitive. So I'm like, he kicked a kid into a manger, but then he's kind of crying when his cousins are like making fun of him. You know what I mean?
That kid, he was a little unbalanced, but it still worked for the movie. Yeah, they made him very extreme. He's fighting, at the mall.
Oh,
and then they take him home. He's got a black eye. The parents downplay it, even though they seem like the kind of parents that would punish him for 89 years and say, you know, give me your cell phone and your cable plan. And but then he's like a good kid. He's making cookies with the grandmother, and it's not a chore. And then he's the one who wanted to write this letter to Santa and really send his letter off to Santa. And then, you know, just because –
oh, wait. Spoilers, guys.
The whole thing is spoilers.
Yeah. And then so if you want to check back in, go back to minute, and we'll be talking about other Christmas films.
Yeah, I'd say check in at about, 45 minutes or so.
I'm going to have Lazabeth fill that in.
Sure.
But so, you know, the kid wanted to send his nice little letter to Santa. And then because of these snide, indignant cousins of his and just the way the family isn't getting along, he rips up his letter. He throws it out the window. It blows off. And evidently that means that it magically goes to Krampus. And this horrible storm comes over the sky like in Poltergeist. It felt like a nod to Poltergeist. And before you know it, weird things start happening, horrible storms, and we know that it's Krampus season.
And it becomes like Dawn of the Dead, or no, Night of the Living Dead meets 30 Days of Night meets Gremlins.
And, you know, you say Gremlins, so there are all sorts of, like, monsters that we're introduced to in this, right? All sorts of monsters, and one of them that we see kind of later in the movie, but at this point I think we get the right to hopscotch around, are the elves. And I gotta say, the elves I really wasn't that fond of. I love most of the monsters in this movie. I like that the elves kind of had a gremlin sort of vibe to them, the way that they were surrounding the house, their menace. But they're wearing masks, and this is where the budget comes in.
Yeah.
The elves are all wearing masks, and there's no reason for the elves to be wearing masks. They don't feel like Christmassy masks. I suppose they're Krampus masks. But, like, it was totally pointless for them to have masks, and that just kind of annoyed me.
I got two things that kind of annoyed me. This kid who has a reasonably good life in the suburbs, you know, his parents care for him. You know, he loses all hope, you know, throws a letter in the air. Krampus comes and murders an entire block. And it's like, geez Louise. Like there's, like, wars in other houses. Like, gingerbread men are getting killed. And then the other one is the grandma and Adam Scott's mom or grandma, one of the two, had actually seen Krampus before. So during this whole time when Krampus is attacking, she's just kind of hanging out. And I'd be like, yo, grandma, like, tell us more. Like, grandma, you know what's going to happen. And, like, she kind of just chilled. Like, she had to know that it was going to end terribly for everybody, but that she just sort of hung out, right? Did you not get that vibe? Lazabeth, did you see this movie?
No, I didn't.
I got you.
I'm just curious, what are your reactions to anything that we've said so far? Like, has any of it perked an ear yet? Like, were you interested in seeing this movie based on the trailer?
It sounds like it has conflicting ideas, right?
Yeah,
like
it works. We're being like deliberately bipolar right now, I think, right, for the sake of a fun argumentative podcast. But, like, I thought that this movie worked overall. I enjoyed the movie.
So it sounds like it wants to be a horror movie, but it wants to do it in a different vein that you don't usually see.
Yeah, you know? And it does. And, you know, it has, like, the family issues, and they're all jerky at first, but then they all kind of come around and, you know, they have character arcs. Yeah. But I'll tell you, though, this movie is – it's much like Gremlins. Like, you know, they kill that old lady. It has a mean streak to it. Like, the first person to die is the teenage sister.
Oh, yeah. So that girl, who maybe is, what, 13, right?
Yeah. And
she is the only person in the entire household at this point in the movie who hasn't said anything negative about anybody.
Yeah. And she just is on her cell phone, of course. But, yeah, she gets killed. And then they go out to hunt for her. And then they just kind of leave her out in the cold and kind of hang out.
You know, when she goes out, that was a cool scene, though. So she's out there all alone.
But do you think that was more about the look as opposed to, like, that was a beautiful look. Like, I could look at that all day, that scene. But it was still, I mean, it looked great, for sure. And I thought maybe she would make it, but she didn't.
So when she goes out, though, right, you know, she goes out, this is when we're just realizing things are sort of amiss. It's after the storm came over and, like, the electricity is going out. They have no communication. So the girl wants to go down the street to her boyfriend's. And when she goes down the street again, that all the houses are empty. The lights are out. It seems like it's a ghost town in a storm. And at one point, and she looks at the roof of a house. She sees the Krampus, and it's this huge, like, ogre-sized monster on the roof of a house. And that scene alone worked, and that's all I thought we'd get with this kind of budget, right? Yeah. And then all CGI, but I thought it worked. That thing is Hulk leaping from roof to roof, chasing this girl down.
Yeah.
And I thought that was actually really exciting. Like, when it was leaping and you can't really see it at that point, like, I thought that was really cool. You hear it slamming on the roofs.
And, like, it didn't go full whiteout. You know that movie Whiteout with Kate Beckinsale? When there's a whiteout, you can't see anything on the screen. And you're like, that's cheating. So, like, they never fully whiteout everything. So, yeah, it was really well done. And it does establish – and I was pretty amazed that they killed her first. Well, I guess she got thrown into something.
And she's the good one.
Yeah. And then –
she's the good one first.
And then the rest of the film kind of just takes place at the house with the family under siege from the creatures. But all right, so then eventually, do you mind if I jump in here?
You're go nuts.
Oh, so the grandma, you know, she had actually seen Krampus before during World War II. There was a lot of starving. There was a lot of, you know, people had no food, you know, they lost hope. So she has this little Santa doll, and it goes to, like, a claymation type. It's animation, but it's not, I don't believe it's claymation. Kind of looks like Leica Light. And, she has a little Santa. She gets a loaf of bread. She gets the loaf of bread stolen because these people are starving. And then, you know, they're living a war-torn thing with tons of deaths, tons of loss. And then her parents get kind of snooty. And then she throws her little Santa doll away. And then the Krampus comes and kills the entire town but leaves her alone.
And there's someone to tell the story. There's someone to warn them.
But then I'm kind of thinking, how many children in this world have lost hope? So during Christmas. So that means Krampus has probably wiped out like 6,000 cities. More than that, he's probably wiped out everything. So how are they keeping this like a secret? Because transparency.
He's wiped out 6,000 families.
Yeah, well, but he killed the neighborhood in Krampus.
Because we later learned that they were already in a snow globe. They had already been taken.
Yeah, no, but all right, but I mean, they're all in hell. Like, they're all in his – like, all these people got thrown – at the end, they go into this big hell portal, and they get thrown down into hell, like his Krampus's hell, where he keeps them in snow globes. So he's basically wiping out entire neighborhoods when one kid loses hope.
No, I'm saying that once you've summoned the Krampus, it's not really you summoning the Krampus. It's you ending up in your magic snow globe.
Yeah, but what happened?
Her personal hell is an empty version of your own neighborhood.
But what happened to her boyfriend that was killed? Remember the gingerbread men in the on the refrigerator? Her boyfriend was there, then he wasn't. And then all the dead people in the trucks? Like, that one guy was dead in his car?
I think that's just a manifestation of the hell, though.
I think all those people were murdered. But wouldn't people start to notice that, like, all right, so how many children do you think lose hope during Christmas time and kind of diss Santa? 6 million in the history of the world? So 6 million families have gone missing.
I maintain that is a lot of families.
I mean, like, but right, though, like, we're talking billions of people, and he's been around for a really long time. So, like,
Maybe he's working with the Grim Reaper from Monty Python's Meaning of Life, and these are all families that had the salmon mousse at their Christmas party, and so they're just all dead. They all died together.
There's a lot of gas leaks in this world. But I'm sitting there, and I'm like, how many people have to die? Like, this one kid, you know, reasonably well-taken-care of kid who's normally just fights, and his parents seem to love him. He kind of throws a miniature temper tantrum, and Krampus comes out and just wipes out his whole family. And then he's in his own hell where they're all freaked out because they know that they're in a snow globe.
Okay, I'm going to be critical for the sake of being critical, but it's a legit criticism at this point, and you made me notice it. So we're talking about kids losing hope, right? And yeah. Like, and that's what's summoning the Krampus? This kid got into a fight because other kids were saying there wasn't a Santa, and he wanted to send a letter to Santa, and he didn't give up on Santa. I mean, he gave up on his sense of family, but like, this is a kid who wanted Christmas to be wonderful and just had his heart broken. Like, I mean, that's he was the right kind of kid.
Yeah.
He was a good kid with a bit of a temper tantrum because he got into a fight, but like, he was a good Santa-believing 10-year-old, and Krampus still came.
Yeah, like one moment of him being a brat wiped out his entire family.
Oof. That's rough.
So it's like this, and at the end, the Krampus is a big jerk. He's like, take me instead! And the Krampus was going to leave him, but the Krampus is like, I'll take you too. So, like, you know, everyone ends up in a snow globe in their own hell. But, I mean, I don't know. So the story to me, like, I mean, I feel like a lot of families would go missing because of, like, and you know what made me annoyed is this kid lives in a great neighborhood, all this stuff. And like, and then you show a comparison to like a war-torn post-World War II destructive area. And it's like, I just didn't feel the comparison was fair. Like there are people in this world who have lost hope because there is no hope in their world. They don't live in a comfortable home with heating, air conditioning, and plenty of food. You know, parents who reasonably love them. You know what I mean? Like, so getting off that. But the creatures, John, what'd you think about the – I love the teddy bear. There's a teddy bear with, like, a mouth of not a shark, but huge teeth.
That teddy bear has, like, rows of teeth. And I love that teddy bear. And I wish that teddy bear had a more sensational scene. But when he did appear and attack the first time, I loved that little creature.
And there's a jack-in-the-box that looks like a tremor.
Dude, and it moves through the snow like a tremor.
Yeah, and it eats like, and it ate the two, the girls, or one of the girls.
This is what I mean when I say, so by the way, this movie is not at all scary, right? There aren't even really jump scares in it. Like, when you are presented with scenes of horror, they're almost presented in a cheeky way. It's like the parents go upstairs because a kid went up to the attic and like, they lost track of him.
Yeah.
So when they go up to the attic, they find the kid, the kid's feet are sticking out of the mouth of this giant monster slug jack-in-the-box. And like, it's like, but it's not a jump scare. There's no loud noises. You just see it. And it's like, it was literally like you caught the monster in the middle of the night and you flicked the light on and its hand was in the cookie jar. Like, it reacted like it was like, uh-oh.
He's
like,
drinking, I got he's caught. Drinking milk from the carton.
And so it just like, it keeps shoving the kid's like feet down its mouth and it starts crawling for an air vent, like, yeah, to get away.
And so, like, you know, there's a cheeky little – it was edited a lot because they didn't want to show a lot of blood to keep the PG-13. And it actually made me think about how great the kitchen fight was in Gremlins because she straight up wipes those little boogers out.
Put one in a blender. I think I mentioned that in three different podcasts now. But she put one in a blender and hit frappe, and you see its guts. Like, just – so I mean the liquid snot, whatever, going all over.
Yeah.
But – there were monsters like so that was cool. The Jack in the Box is awesome. The gingerbread men.
Oh, they were adorable.
They weren't they? And they were in the trailer. I'm so glad they weren't in the trailer. They were such a pleasant surprise.
They did kind of differ though, because there's a scene where a gingerbread man comes down with this little hook, and he grabs this kid really fast with a hook, like he moves in light speed with a very heavy hook, and then pulls the kid away. But then later in the kitchen fight against David Koechner, like, they're not that tough. Like, their kind of strengths differ depending on the scene, right?
We have actually discussed this at length during the George Romero podcast, episode 15, when the zombies or your enemies in general are as fast or as dangerous as the scene requires. And so when there's one enemy, that one enemy is lethal. When there's five enemies, each enemy is less lethal.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when we have more gingerbread men attacking you. They are collectively less lethal.
Yeah, but no, you're right. And no, but you know, I think it's going to become a nice Christmas cult classic. It just sort of annoyed me that this reasonably nice kid with this reasonably nice family has a little temper tantrum and then a Krampus wipes him out. Like, it's just kind of insulting that that's him losing all hope compared to that other flashback. And maybe the grandma knew they were dead and she was just trying to prolong it. But it all, for me, it felt like he had a lot of good ideas, but he maybe didn't have the time and budget to realize it. But it's still, you know, it's still an enjoyable film. Like, it has a fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But I just kind of had some qualms with it, I guess. And I felt like the kid should have been the main star of the movie, but he kind of gets pushed aside. I mean, he's the kid that starts it. He's the kid that ends it. And then it becomes more about the parents. Whereas, like, in Gremlins or Rare Exports, you know, it's more about the kids themselves. So, I mean, if this is a movie he wanted to make for kids, maybe they should have gotten a stronger child actor and have it focus more on the children, not like, you know, the redneck father, you know, or the cardigan-wearing husband. Like, it should have been more child empowerment, even though they're all going to die. But what do you think about that, Loving Good?
What you're saying, it's like it all makes sense to me now that I'm not watching the movie, now that I'm thinking back. But none of that felt like a flaw while I was watching it. And maybe it's because of the fun of the diversity of the monsters.
Yeah.
Because this movie was like – it was popcorn fun horror. Like I even though I was annoyed by this weird winged evil angel doll monster and that came down, and there you know, there were other things, but there were so many neat things that happened in this movie. Like, random snowmen are appearing in the front yard.
Yeah,
and they are like, they're kind of weird looking. Like, they are harrowing. Those snowmen had me nervous. I thought there were dead bodies inside of them or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought they were going to find the bodies of the kids, kind of like in Attack of the Killer Clowns when they would put them in the cotton candy.
Cotton candy.
Like, I really thought it was going to be something twisted like that, but, like, that was cool. The Krampus itself, I thought, was really cool looking.
It had a skin mask.
Yeah, the only downer, but that was budget, is that the face is totally stationary.
Yeah.
So it's like a mask, and when it moves, it's like its mouth that's wide open stays in its exact same position. I guess I'd rather that than they CGI it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was still cool, though. It had its long, bony fingers. It was, like, a weird, hulking, bent-over mess. Lazaveth, we're mowing you because we've seen the movie recently, and you didn't. Any reactions?
I just want to ask.
They're evil gingerbread men, not played by Gary Busey.
I just want to ask where you guys rate this in the pantheon of Christmas horror movies. Better or worse than Jack Frost?
Better. better.
Oh my gosh, that's a terrible movie.
Jack Frost
Michael
has
Keaton
Shannon,
in a rock band.
Shannon Elizabeth was in Jack Frost.
I mean, look, if we are judging the quality of a Christmas horror movie by the amount of Shannon Elizabeth's breasts that are on screen, then I guess Jack Frost wins. But without that particular metric, I'm going to go with this.
I'll be honest. That's the only reason why I watched Jack Frost.
So there's a scene in Jack Frost, and they make fun of it, and how did that get made? How, like, this thing, like, the evil snowman appears in the shower with her,
mm-hmm.
and, like, somehow her arms get stuck inside of it, right?
Yeah.
And so she can't move her arms, and all he does to kill her is, like, move forward and then backwards and slam her into the tile wall over and over again. And I'm just like I've seen this movie. I just fell apart when this was happening. That scene is worth a whole star on a rating. That would be why I gave Jack Frost a star.
And this is not the Michael Keaton film where he's a musician who's never home who becomes a snowman.
That one gets zero stars.
I mean, for me, I'm a big time Gremlins and Rare Exports guy, so I would put it above those. But I mean, I think it's a welcome addition to the canon.
I just love those films. They just
I'm gonna tie it with Rare Exports, but I don't think that like anything can touch Gremlins.
Yeah, I mean that was just such a blending of the two. So I mean, if you haven't watched Gremlins, watch that. But I mean, no, I think Krampus, you know, it'll be a fun. I think it's gonna have an audience, and I just wish there was a couple things that could have been shorn up. But you know, overall, it looks great. I mean, it shows. You know, I'd like to see more of the world. But I do think the grandma should have opened up her damn mouth.
Oh, God. Like she's just mumbling German to herself and everyone else is like, what? And then she just like walks away. It's like, lady, we reveal at the end of the movie, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
And that you knew that you were left to understand what happened. And you're not warning people? Like, are there rules that we didn't hear? Are you not allowed to tell us? Like, tell us that in the movie somehow. Yeah. Because I don't understand why it is that you're keeping your mouth shut when you know your family is going to get Krampused.
Like, and I feel like that girl had a reason to sort of lose all hope. But, like, for that to be, like, you know how they said that people were, like, full of greed? I just didn't like that comparison to modern day. Like, I felt like that was kind of cheapy. But, yeah, but David Koechner's my boy. Watch Cheap Thrills. I like him in this movie.
And despite all the criticism, I really enjoyed this movie. I really recommend this movie. I think this movie is very, very enjoyable. I mean, I can pick it up. This is like Prometheus. It's got all sorts of things that we can pick apart, but at the end of the day, I love the movie.
Yeah.
It was all right. All right, guys.
What you're saying.
Yeah. It's time to take a commercial break. Actually, we'll see you guys in a little bit.
Peace.
Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you, Robert. Yeah.
All right, we're still going with it?
Yeah.
All righty.
All right, so what's going on, guys? I'm here to tell you about a quick offer. Quick offer? Or like a...
What about Nick Offer?
Men. Oh, man. So this Ottawa ad's been going pretty good.
I'd say so. By the way, I'm Robert.
Yeah. I'm John. Yeah, Robert, do you want to tell our listeners about a great offer from Audible.com?
Not really, but I will.
All right.
If you go to audibletrial.com/shark, you can get yourself a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial.
Wait. Any book from Audible.
You can only pick one book.
Oh, okay.
But it's one specific book.
One specific book.
Yeah.
But I can get it for free.
It's the second half of the Bible is the only thing you can get for free. No, you can get any book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you go through there and they actually just added the Harry Potter series. Yeah. Some people like that.
So you can probably get one of those for free.
Just one, though. Yeah. But you can get one a month if you get the trial. I mean, you have to pay for it. But at that point, you get a free trial, so you can test it out and see if you like it. And then after that, decide if you want to stick around with it.
Okay, so...
But take advantage.
If you go to audibletrial.com/shark, you get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know. They have over 180,000 books to choose from. For your iPod, your Kindle... Mm-hmm. Yeah, any kind of MP3 player,
right? Yeah.
Anything else?
What's a good title that you would recommend
besides Harry Potter?
Yeah, besides Harry Potter. For Christmas, something Christmassy.
A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
Oh, yeah.
It's a short book, but if you listen to it, you probably get it done in like an hour.
Right. All right, folks, you're here first. You get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook if you go to audibletrial.com/shark. And, yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, man, this was a good commercial.
Yeah, it's our best one.
Glad I could jump in on this one.
Yeah. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Yeah. So during a break, I continued to not watch Krampus. So, no.
And we pondered if The Road was a Christmas movie.
I mean, there were some winter scenes in there. There was a lot of snow. Yeah, they had like a touching father-son relationship. Family.
Yeah, family. Yeah. They're traveling to a place.
I mean, there were guns. There were guns in Die Hard. Die Hard's a Christmas movie, so there's that connection.
Yep. I mean, people ate flesh of, you know, humans, but, you know, at Thanksgiving we eat turkey, so technically everyone's a carnivore.
Well, you remember that one scene in Black Christmas where the dude ate the flesh of his mother, I think.
Oh, yeah, so The Road is a Christmas film.
Yeah, pretty much.
I like it. We need to do this podcast called The Break, where it's just basically us talking about stuff during the break.
One of these days I'll keep recording and not tell you guys, so that way it's truly candid.
I love it.
Yeah. All right, I think we have one more listener question. Mark?
So this is more of the TV angle, but every year from November to December, we are blessed with a lot of Hallmark or Lifetime Christmas movies. So the question here from Will the Cook is, if you had to direct a cheesy Lifetime Christmas movie, what would it be about? And for me, I've watched a lot of these. I just have. I don't care. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care what you think. I've watched a lot of them. They're all trash.
Yeah.
They're all basically diet caffeine-free diet Pepsi.
Isn't that just water?
That yes. Point? They're basically just water.
Okay.
Brown carbonated water.
But there's nothing of substance to them. They're like a Sprite.
Right. You know? I like Sprite, though.
Yeah, they're like a tonic.
Oh, okay.
How's that? You know, if you added a little bit of spice, you know, add a little, you know, some gin in there, they're a lot better, obviously. But so mine is, there's a Christmas series where Steve Guttenberg plays Santa. So Steve Guttenberg gets tired of being Santa. So he leaves the day before Christmas. No one knows where he goes, but he ends up falling off his flying motorcycle, falls headlong into a chimney, gets knocked unconscious, gets amnesia, and he has to live every day again. But the problem is that same day is Christmas, and he's not Santa, so nobody gets any of their toys. So it's up to the family, the precocious children, and what's the lady from Wings? I had her name, but she was like in a bunch of Santa films. She's in there. You know, there's a convenient single mother. She has cute kids. They're trying to bring back his memory. And eventually he falls in love with the single mother and her kids, and he wants to be Santa again, and everything's happy.
The lady from Wings, do you mean Deborah Messing before she was on Will and Grace?
No, that was Amy Yazbek.
Okay.
But wait. But, oh, man, that guy from Sideways was in it.
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah, right? And he was in a show with Deborah Messing. All right, so who is it? Oh, Crystal Bernard.
I know what you're talking about. I do know what you're talking about. Ned and Stacy.
Yeah, Ned and Stacy.
Oh, I remember that show.
Yeah. And so so Crystal Bernard, she was in some Christmas movies as well. So it's basically about Steve Guttenberg living this – because every Christmas movie is like either like a businesswoman moves back to town and she learns what's important. She meets like the hunk that's conveniently single. Or it's about like Santa needing to find a wife. Santa always needs to find a wife. And then, you know, at the end, always things happy. So we got Santa. We have him losing his memory. He's living every day. He meets a precocious child with his single mother. All is right in the world. That's mine.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think you pretty much hit all the standard Lifetime movie tropes all in one go. I think, did you guys ever see A Deadly Adoption, the Will Ferrell Lifetime movie?
I watched 20 minutes of it, then I just fast-forwarded on 2.5.
Yeah, I actually watched the whole thing.
Brother.
The great thing about A Deadly Adoption is that, like, since Will Ferrell's in it, like, everybody's expecting it to be a parody, but it wasn't. Like, it was just a straight-up Lifetime movie. I think that's
a parody.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, there were very few funny scenes in that movie. Well,
I mean, if you switched it for other actors.
Yeah. It would have been a Lifetime movie. I think that's the right approach when you're making these types of movies. Like they know the audience that they're targeting, right?
It's a formula.
Yeah.
And people want a convenient Sprite.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So if I wanted to make a Christmas Lifetime movie, I would just take all the usual tropes, like you mentioned, Mark, and just maybe set it during Christmas. All you need to do. That's all the target audience wants.
Really. Yep. You don't need to mix it up. You don't need any, you know, Inceptions type stuff.
Yeah.
Wait, can I pause and do an aside before answering the question?
Sure.
So, Lazabeth, during the break, you mentioned like all the common tropes, or you just mentioned all the common tropes. And during the break, you mentioned something that you thought of based on our discussion before the break. What was that?
Are you talking about that Tales from the Crypt episode?
Like, yeah.
In the Tales from the Crypt TV series on HBO, there's an episode. It was basically a Christmas episode. The plot involved a runaway mental patient dressed up as Santa. And, like, the episode basically consists of him, like, just terrorizing his family, like, during, like, a winter night. It was a very, very well done episode. It's very creepy.
Like, if you strip away the Santa part and just look at the things you said, you just, like, captured a whole lot of slasher movie tropes. Like, for some reason, they can't get out of the house. They're kind of snowed in. Mm-hmm. There's a guy escaped from an asylum. He's terrorizing this one family for some reason. Like, it just oozes general slasher. Mm-hmm. And it's cool that that Tales from the Crypt episode is a remake of the short film from the 1973 Tales from the Crypt called All Through the House. Oh, nice. But after they made All Through the House in 1973, they made a 1984 movie based on that short called Silent Night, Deadly Night. And then 2012, they remade it. So they remade the short from 1973 in like the 90s on Tales from the Crypt. And then they remade the movie based on the 1973 short from 2012.
Oh, man.
Talk about using those tropes up.
It's like Inception. Right? Of tropes. Like, you just keep remaking
the same
movie.
It's like when Mark talks about the Mummy movies and the Scorpion King movies.
You know, the Scorpion King has a prequel that has a prequel that has a sequel.
So let me get this straight. Like, each successive, like, Scorpion King movie is actually a prequel. So you just keep going further back in time with each new movie release.
I think there was a sequel on one of the prequels, and then it went back to a prequel.
Right. That's very confusing, right?
Yeah, because The Mummy, you know, has a sequel, then it has a spinoff with The Mummy, the Scorpion. Yeah, so it's like, it's a spinoff of a sequel of a reboot of a Universal Classic reboot. There's a lot of iterations of The Mummy. But Levengood, what Hallmark Lifetime Christmas movie would you make?
Okay, so I really just came up with the concept, and this was really hard for me to wrap my head around because I have basically never seen a Hallmark movie. I don't think ever. Even growing up with a single mom, but but so my idea, it started out as like I wanted to kind of loosely remake Sylvester Stallone's Over the Top. But I need to make it Hallmark friendly, so I want to make it like a Dr. Seussian and a Whoville version of an animated Over the Top, where to save Christmas from the Grinch, and now the Grinch is the grandfather who has custody of Sylvester Stallone's son. It's the Grinch, and Sylvester Stallone is this big biceped who in Whoville who's trying to save Christmas.
Hmm.
And so in saving his son from the Grinch, he'll also simultaneously save Christmas as a side bet that he has with the Grinch, I guess. So he's going to save his son, save Christmas, and therefore save his son's Christmas.
And his grandfather's soul. The grandfather's going to become a guy who loves Christmas.
I guess his heart can grow those 2.5 sizes up. But I like imagining this like this irregularly big bicep too in Whoville. And then there's this Grinch with, like, Robert Loggia's voice.
Does he drive a truck?
My Who drives a truck.
Nice.
So what animation style did you want to go for? Did you want to go for, like, a Pixar type of animation style? Or do you want, like, 80s?
I was going to go, like, Seussian. Just old school, like, 80s Dr. Seuss cartoons.
You didn't want to go, like, 80s, like, Saturday morning action cartoon style, like He-Man. Or, like, Transformers or G.I. Joe.
Pew, pew.
Yeah,
I don't know. All those people were wearing Speedos. It was very strange.
So we have a Who story, a Who Christmas story with arm wrestling.
Yes, an arm wrestling Hallmark movie. I think we're due.
I mean, he would eat a lot of green eggs and ham for protein.
Are you kidding me? Like, yeah, he'd be slamming the green eggs and ham.
You know, Go Dog Go.
That's a lot of protein.
What's Go Dog Go? Is that a book?
Is that Seuss? I had a book as a kid called Go Dog Go. All right, so we got – those are our Christmas movies, and where are we going from there, John?
Well, you know what? I mean, we talked about horror for a while because I love my horror, but I think that we need to tap into some other Christmas movies, and I think we need to wind it back a little bit. I think all these movies have to be at least 10 years old. So let's talk about some movies that maybe some of our listeners don't see enough or haven't seen yet. Like, what year did Home Alone come out? Around 1991,
92? Yeah, that's when it came out. Let me quick IMDb cert, 90. 90 and 1990, good old Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin.
25 years ago, this is a movie that we grew up with, and it, I think we can safely say, is a Christmas movie.
No, yeah, I mean, it's on a loop. That and Home Alone 2 are on a constant Christmas loop. I mean, they're always on.
A Christmas loop, like A Christmas Story, would be on TBS or TNT?
Yeah, like Home Alone's everywhere. Like during the season, it's everywhere. And during a kid, I absolutely love these movies. But, you know, as an adult, I've started to find something interesting out. Do you guys want to hear it?
Sure.
No.
No, moving on. Moving on. So when Marv and Harry, the two thieves, Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern, are not around Kevin, Macaulay Culkin, they're actually pretty good thieves. Like, if you think about the beginning of Home Alone, Joe Pesci is dressed up in a police uniform. Somebody on Reddit was like, it's a Chicago uniform, not a suburb uniform. But he goes into the family's house. He finds out about their automatic timers on their lights, their locks, whether they'll be home. He basically scouts it all out, and they don't suspect a thing, right? They rob houses during the daytime. They have, like, this crazy wet band. They flood houses. They're, like, cocky. They've done a lot of it. In the deleted scenes, they know everything about houses. They know how to scout them. They have their own song. So eventually, you know, their pride gets the better of them. They want revenge. They make it personal, and they just go too far, and that's their downfall. But they go to jail, right? 9 months later, there's a prison riot. They escape from prison.
This is Home Alone 2.
Yeah, Home Alone 2.
Like the prelude to Home Alone 2.
Yeah. They escape from – you know what? In Home Alone, how the heck could they have seen that a guy with a shovel was going to wipe them out? Like, they got really unlucky.
So that old guy was creepy. Creepy people are sneaky.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you couldn't have seen that coming. Home Alone 2, they escape from prison. They escape the ensuing manhunt, right? Then they go to this ice rink where Marv, Daniel Stern, steals gloves, a scarf, and earmuffs with nobody noticing on an ice rink. Then they plan to rob a toy store that will have loads of unmarked cash because they cannot deposit it on Christmas Eve, right? Then, you know, Marv speaks French, but he gets slapped. He has good coffee drinking etiquette. Then they go to the toy store. They hide in some homes. Everybody leaves, right? It's a nonviolent crime. And they have a chance to make all this cash, but then the little punk wrecks it. And then, of course, they chase them, which they don't have to. So basically their kryptonite is this little child. But if it hadn't have been for their quest for revenge – I mean, look at Old Boy. That doesn't end well. Their criminal activities were pretty good. Like, they escaped from prison. They escaped a manhunt. They planned a couple of nice nonviolent crimes. They knew how to, like, scope out houses. These guys were good. They just met their kryptonite.
Oh, can we go with this theory? There's the dumb theory that I don't like that most people would use, and that's like he was dumb around Macaulay Culkin because that's what the script said, right? And, you know, it's like they're smart otherwise, but I want to think that this kid, this clever little kid, was such a wild card that his unpredictability. It doesn't just take you off your guard. Like when you're shocked, sometimes you forget what you were going to say or what you were going to do.
Yeah,
I think that's what he's doing. Like when this kid is fighting back, it's shocking. When this kid has any kind of plan, it's shocking. When the kid isn't an idiot and just begs for mercy or like, you know, forgiveness or something or don't hurt me, it's shocking. And so it takes them off their game and it's like you're totally rattled. It's like you're flat footed and then, you know, you get hit in the head by a snow shovel by an old man, a little kid gets the one up on you or crawls between your legs or slips away and sets a trap for you. Like, I feel like that's what has to be going on because they were doing everything so well.
Yeah. I mean, their thievery was good. The cops had no idea who they were.
I mean, and they walked right into the Home Alone house when everyone's packing. And they're like, we just wanted to check on things while you're away, make sure the house is safe, people are away for the holidays. Like, they're just hiding in plain sight.
Yep, and they're good. They like, you know, and like they take advantage, and they're planning nonviolent crimes. Like, I don't think they would have killed Macaulay Culkin. These guys are planning on going to houses when no one's there. They're not killing anybody. I mean, they are flooding homes, which is terrible during Christmas time. But I mean, I don't know. They were good at what they did, and they just met an industrious, precocious, and someone said borderline sociopathic child who knew how to, like, make doorknobs hot, and he could gauge paint cans perfectly. I mean, this kid, there's no 8-year-old like this on the planet. So it's not their fault. I mean, they escaped from prison and a manhunt. Like, Wesley Snipes could barely do that, and Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern had no problem.
Well, hold on. Wesley Snipes didn't do that. He went to jail.
Oh, yeah. Well then, you know, Harrison Ford, look how much it took for him to get away. Like, these guys had no problem getting New York in a fish truck.
God, The Fugitive. What a great movie.
Okay,
is that a Christmas movie?
So I want to ask this question real quick. If Macaulay Culkin had to go up, had to defend his house against Krampus, how would that go down?
Wait, now you just asked that question. I think you have a loaded answer. I want to hear your loaded answer first.
I want to hear what you guys. Yeah,
I think it would play like Skyfall. Remember when like Bond and them were like, and the end of Skyfall where they like home alone the house with like exploding light bulbs and stuff.
Yeah,
like this movie, Krampus is more violent, so the PG, it would have been a PG-13 rating. I think the gingerbread men would have suffered terrible deaths. I think Krampus would have had some ornaments stuck in his feet. I think he would have had at least one of his horns cut off. His head would have been lit on fire. I know elves hate tarantulas, so they would have ran away.
Yeah.
You know, I think those Krampus people would have thrown themselves in hell after battling this kid.
Oh, awesome.
What do you think, Levin? Good?
I don't know. You know, it's like I feel like he could defeat the gingerbread men. Like, he'd have a clever, like, you know, like, swinging, like, sledgehammer kind of trap to take care of the bear. The Krampus, he'd just evade because he's a lot smaller than it. But I don't know, man. Like, when it comes to the Jack in the Box, the whole thing about that Jack in the Box was that when we first meet him, really, he's already got a kid sticking out of his mouth. I don't know. Is Kevin going to... I really wouldn't be brokenhearted if Macaulay Culkin got eaten by that Jack-in-the-Box slug monster.
Yeah, I think
like that... I kind of be rooting for it. Like, I loved Home Alone back then, and if I have kids, and I hope I have kids one day, I'd like them to watch and love the Home Alone movie. But right now, as someone without kids and someone who's not a kid, I want that Jack in the Box to get that snack.
So I feel like this Jack in the Box is like the Conor McGregor and Holly Holm to Macaulay Culkin's Ronda Rousey and Jose Aldo. Like, you know, he's wiping people out left and right, but then he comes across this one person that just wipes them out. You know what I mean? Like, that's how you get him.
Well, that thing's like weight classes up, too. That was a big... tremor slug.
Yeah. And Kevin's family, dude. Kevin's family was terrible in Home Alone. They were the biggest jerks, and they were terrible to him. And, like, oh, gosh.
So I don't know what it's like to have kids, let alone a whole bunch of kids. But I do have a big family, and we've gone on trips, right, where you have, like, three cars. You fill the three cars before you all go, like, drive an hour to go hiking or something, or vice versa coming back. And there'll be, like, 30 of us, 20 of us. And I don't see how we'd accidentally leave someone, because you're always saying, like, who's got so-and-so? And you're kind of going through it. Like, when you have a big family, you Rolodex them in your head. You think of them by sub-family units. It's like, okay, Mark and his wife and Mark's parents. All right, where's John and John's kids and John's cousin? All right, where's Lazavath and his girlfriend and his mother? Like, you know, like, you compartmentalize. It's not like you're just like, how many of us are there? Oh, there's 14. Like, they counted the heads and they accidentally counted the neighbor kid's head. Like, I don't think that's how families really do that. I think that they compartmentalize. They think, where are the three boys? Where are my two girls?
Yeah.
Where's my husband? Like, so that was, of all the things I'm going to call far-fetched in this movie, that's the part that I'm calling bullshit on, is the method of making sure that everyone was in the airport shuttle.
And Marvin Harry's bad luck was all because of bad parenting. Like, how can thieves predict that?
That's, yeah, it's like, whoa, what if they leave a kid behind by accident?
Yeah. I mean, their plan was perfect. It's just terrible parenting.
They're also a little bit gullible, too, right?
Yeah.
You remember that scene where Kevin played that one scene from the movie, the gangster movie. I forgot what it was called. And yeah. They just fell for it.
You've been smooching everybody.
Yeah.
But they also fooled people at five people from a 4-star hotel who have to be on the top of their game. You know what I mean? In Home Alone 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are you talking about Kevin fooling the robbers?
Yeah.
Yeah, like he also fools some very established staff. And poor Cliff. You've been smooching everybody. Cliff, no. Dirty Mo with the gimpy leg. Yes, I mean, you know, they're a little gullible, but I mean, you know, they played it safe. They heard voices in there, so they knew to get away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you guys want to hear a random fact? Chris Columbus directed this movie, and he was originally supposed to direct National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, but Chevy Chase was such a jerk that he went on to Home Alone.
Chevy Chase was a jerk?
Yep, to Chris Columbus. And then he asked John Hughes if he could go, and he got let off the project, and then he went and directed Home Alone, Chris Columbus.
Wow. It's funny you say that. Can I transition? Can we transition to Lampoon?
Dude, I just John Stockton you an assist.
All right, I just want to make sure that this is what happened. By the way, Home Alone, 25 years old, still worth watching.
Yeah.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, man. Like, Clark Griswold, Chevy Chase, in this movie that came out in, like, 1986. I just saw it again last night. I love this movie to pieces, but I swear to God, not only is Chevy Chase like a jerk and an asshole in this, he's a borderline sociopath. Like, I think he has an actual dissociative disorder in this movie. The things that he does, like, do you guys know what I'm talking about? Like, have you seen this recently?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, he is, what does he do? He talks to the neighbors. Like, now he clearly has annoying neighbors, but he says things to them like, they're like, where are you going to put a tree that big, Griswold? And he says, bend over and I'll show you. And he's like, you got a lot of nerve talking to me like that, Griswold. And then he looks over at the wife and he says, I wasn't talking to you. Like, that's like pretty twisted to say in daylight from your driveway, it like on Christmas break. And then he ignores it when his daughter's eyes are so frostbitten that her eyes are frozen open.
Oh, like, yeah.
He ignores it for the bliss of the tree. I get this is a comedy, but still. There's this weird road rage incident in the beginning that gets them almost killed, and he never apologizes once for it. And he's telling executives after he kisses his boss's butt, they are 3 feet away from him, and he's saying, kiss my ass, kiss his ass, kiss his ass, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, he is a sociopath. He's a lunatic, this guy.
Like, I love, what is that scene where he's like, where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no. We're all in this together.
And then he says it like he's nuts, too. Yeah. Not like he's controlling. He's like, where are you going? You're leaving? Like, it's like, join me in my madness.
And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to fall and find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut.
Oh, my God. You know, talk about a movie that I love and is a hilarious, fun experience, but there clearly was some mean-spiritedness hidden in this movie. Yeah. And not hidden that well. Like in the great aunt and great uncle that were severely demented, like she packs her cat alive as a Christmas gift and her husband almost burns the house down. When he burns the tree down, and like when they ask the great aunt to say grace, she says the pledge allegiance to the flag. Like, I mean, I'm laughing, but like I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know, I've got a 90-year-old grandmother that's right about there. It's sitting kind of close to home, National Lampoon.
It's like, and then what does he call the RV? A tenement on wheels.
So Randy Quaid. Guys, anybody, you know, you might not have seen this movie. This movie is 29 years old. Can you believe that, Mark?
Oh, gosh.
This movie's 29 years old. But, like, it still holds up, in my opinion. But I'm kind of living off of my love for it when I watch it, I guess. There's that nostalgia. But Randy Quaid, like the poor guy, he's, like, kind of gone mad in the last decade.
Oh, yeah, he's lost it.
But back then, like, he was just a great, like, funny character actor, and he's playing this kind of, like, this trailer park, unfortunately out of work and poor, exploitative kind of brother-in-law of Clark's. He's that family member no one wants around. Again, it's that trope that you always have, but it was done well in this movie. But
there's that scene. I'm cleaning out the shitter.
That's right. Yeah, there's that scene where he's got the big tube going into the sewer. He just looks out, and Clark is just looking out with disdain, holding his coffee, and his brother-in-law is out there in his underwear, a bathrobe, like his boxer shorts, a bathrobe, and a winter hat. And he like raises up a beer in the air, and he says, "Shitter was full." Clark looks at his wife. He's like, "Oh, honey, shitter was full. Did you check our shitter? Is our shitter full?"
when he says that, Eddie's like, "Can I refill your eggnog for you? Get you something to eat? Drive you out to the middle of nowhere and leave you for dead?" Like he throws some really, and then like that. Like it was very crazy, the light scene, like how much like energy he used and like the staple, and he kept going with the staples.
Oh God, yeah.
Like this is a movie for me where I watch it and I like it, but it's insane. Maybe that's why people like it. Like, is it good-hearted? Why is this movie a Christmas classic?
You know, it ends on a very sweet note, and it begins on a very sweet note, and I think that's what makes this movie work. It's like Caddyshack. Caddyshack is like over-the-top weird jokes, but it starts and closes with a good sense of camaraderie and unity. I think this is like your holiday Caddyshack. Even though it's 90 minutes long, 80 minutes in between are utter bonkers lunacy. But the 5 minutes in the beginning, the 5 minutes in the end – tie it together and leave you with a good feeling. And like, and by the way, with speaking of the beginning and the end, not even having anything to do with the plot, in the beginning there's this animated sequence to a theme song. It's like, it's that time. Christmas time is here. Everybody knows. Y'all know the song? You know what I'm talking about? But it's got this little Santa Claus animation, and it is like the cutest little thing where like these little accidents keep happening to the Santa Claus, and the song has nothing but sweet lyrics, and they play it right at the opening, at the closing credits too. And that kind of matches the first few minutes and last few minutes of the movie that, again, they're good-natured. Like,
you're right.
Yeah. Clark in the very opening scene, Clark is in the car. They're singing together. He doesn't get angry when the kid doesn't sing. He's like, they're like, "Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la. Take it, Russ." Fa la la la. You know, they just keep going and they're having a good time and it's normal. And he's like, "Why are we going out to get this tree? Why?" You know, he's like, "Because we're gonna have a good old fashioned family Christmas together." And the wife is like, "Well, we need to have all these people come." He says, "No, I've always dreamt of this. I want to have a big family Christmas in our house." Like, it's a nice thought. And then later it goes into overcompensation and how that falls apart. But then at the end, it all works out. And you know, it's like, yeah. But again, the 80 minutes in between, like, you would never know that there was any family unity. It was bonkers.
I love that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in it, and then Johnny Galecki from Big Bang Theory.
I mean, it's the brother, the young brother.
So, but yeah, all right.
So, Lazabeth, when was the last time you saw this movie? Because I just saw it, like, last night.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, it's been a couple years, maybe, like, 2 years since I've seen it. But am I the only one who watches this movie, like, outside of Christmas? Like, I don't think I've ever actually watched it during Christmas. You know,
really? My mother loved it. I would watch it every year a couple times.
Yeah, I just do it Christmas. I'm like a Christmas...
I know, it's always been, like, whenever I watch, like, this movie, it's always part of, like, a National Lampoon marathon. You know,
that's a whole thing.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, no, I love this movie. Hilarious. But then again, it's a Christmas movie, so. my thing is Christmas movies.
So it's like, you like it, but you can tolerate it.
Yeah, I can tolerate it.
There we go.
You know, I'm only just putting this together now. Like, so bear with me. So the neighbors, right? The neighbors are, like, not good-natured people, but so much bad stuff happens to them. Julia Louis-Dreyfus and her husband, like, she has a squirrel and a dog bum rush her. They have like ice break through their window and break their stereo. They get blinded and they're falling and breaking things when the lights go on. They're getting spoken to in the rudest of ways, right? Not that they're very polite people, but like it makes me think, between all the bad things that happen to all the people in this, is this maybe playing off of the movie that came out just a few years earlier, A Christmas Story, which is a very kind-hearted movie where all these bad things happen to people, like Ralphie and his family? Like, what other movies, like, what other family-centric movies back in the day were like this? You essentially, like, I can't think of anything other than A Christmas Story and then the Lampoon Family Vacation movies.
Interesting. They weren't all like sugar-coated. They had some oomph to them. You know what I mean?
It's really just the very beginning and the very end of these movies. I feel like it goes the same for A Christmas Story.
Interesting. But I think they were relatable. You know, the dad with his leg lamp and the kid going through this stuff at school. I think there were like certain situations, however exaggerated, that people could kind of go with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like forcing things too much during Christmas. I mean, people do that. Getting your tongue stuck to an icy pole.
Boy, who hasn't been there?
Kidnapping Santa Claus and trying to run Christmas on your own.
Yet another wonderful movie. God, so old. 29 years old. Yeah. 29 years old. Man, and I guess let's get a little more recent. What do you think?
Yeah, is this our last one here?
Last one, Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton's claymation movie. So I just watched this a couple nights ago.
It's 22 years ago.
Dude, yeah, it's old. Yeah,
it's more recent.
Let me tell you know how there are these movies like Monster House and stuff that are made, they're CGI, but they're made to look like claymation?
Yeah.
So this old claymation might be technically inferior.
It doesn't age.
But I feel like it's superior. There's something that's just a little more eerie and a little more legit looking about this real claymation.
Oh, dude, no, this movie does not age. Like the songs, the sense of wonder. Like
God,
when he walks down that little thing, that like the little it's like the man. I can't.
That pumpkin patch twirly thing.
Yeah, when he walks down that, it's just a visually gorgeous movie, and it's really short too.
It's like six minutes.
And you're gonna like this, Lazarus. The director was asked at the Telluride Horror Film Festival recently about whether it was a Christmas film or a Halloween film, and the director said it was a Halloween film.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I always felt this was more of a Halloween film than it was a Christmas movie. You know, because like the local theaters around here, they do like a special Halloween like showing of Nightmare Before Christmas every Halloween, and it just felt appropriate to me.
Huh.
You know?
Yeah. I am willing to submit that when you watch the movie, if you had it on mute, it's clearly more of a Halloween movie than a Christmas movie.
Right.
But what is the most iconic song in the whole movie?
Making Christmas.
I was going to say, what's this?
What's this?
There's magic everywhere. What's this? Floating things in the air. Like, that iconic song, the most energized song in the whole thing, is about him discovering Christmas.
Yeah, that's true.
But then he goes back to, like, his Halloween roots at the end. So, I mean, this is one of those things where I feel like you could argue either way, because there has been an argument about it. I think if I had to watch it, I would probably do it over Halloween. But if someone said, yeah, it's Christmas, you know, as Christmas is too, I'd be like, yeah, I get it. You know, I mean, like,
I say watch it during either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So watch it whenever, guys. It's 76 minutes.
And watch it during Easter.
Watch it at Thanksgiving. Watch it on Valentine's Day. This actually references all the holidays with these doors with portals.
You know, I tell you, like, some of these movies in the 90s just don't age. Like Jurassic Park. Like Nightmare Before Christmas. Some of these things were just marvels that like just still look beautiful today.
Terminator 2.
Like, this is gonna sound crazy, but Waterworld.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was just an expensive piece of junk, but I mean, it looked flawless.
Yeah, it still looks
good. I like that movie. I do. Yeah. I like that movie.
That's another 90s Jack Black cameo. Mars Attacks, Biodome.
I can't watch Biodome anymore, Mark. I'm sorry.
I still know what you did last summer.
Oh, you're saying movies that I can't watch anymore.
No, but yeah, dude, it's just a flawless looking movie, Nightmare Before Christmas. It's
This movie had I like that this was one of those movies that's like great for kids, but it had a lot of adult humor.
Oh my gosh.
Like there was loads of adult humor. And the other thing is that there are things in this movie that are actually like adult level, like twisted, that the kids would miss as well. Like
she's locked up in that thing and that guy's really creepy and she drugs him and then she jumps out of the window and loses her arm.
Right. She's drugging him. Right. So and the trick or treaters, when they're told to get Santa Claus to go get him, well, they go kidnap him. But here's the thing. They're singing a song when they're getting ready, when they're talking about how they're going to go get Santa Claus. And in the song, there are lyrics that talk about beating Santa with a stick and chopping him into bits
and putting a cannon towards his house, right?
Like, yeah, can you imagine? Like, because when you're a kid and you're watching the movie, you don't really pay attention to the lyrics. You're just listening to a fun beat while you're watching what's going on the screen. But they are giving some. They're talking about chopping up Santa.
Yeah.
I mean, chopping him up after they beat him repetitively with a stick. And then, like, they're making Christmas gifts in preparation for Halloween. And there's, like, a dead turtle, a headless doll, and a shot-up rubber ducky with blood wounds.
Yeah. And then Santa has to go back and fix it all.
I mean, if you go back even further, Jack Skellington is conducting scientific experiments on Christmas objects. Like, he literally dissects a teddy bear and examines its innards. He crumples up a Christmas ornament and puts it in boiling water.
I like the color, but I don't know what I mean. And then the chalkboard was pretty great, too.
Yeah, he was doing physics equations to, like, solve Christmas. Like, it was Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was good. But, you know, this is going to sound random, but I know people that, like, if I had to, like, people who would like this, I think that are the people who love Boondock Saints and Donnie Darko. Does that make sense?
There's nothing wrong with that, Mark.
No, I'm just saying, like, that'd be a perfect Blu-ray to give, like, a fan. Because I think those three movies, to me, like, you know, working the Comic-Cons are kind of synonymous with each other. Just like, I don't know, is that, never mind. That's just a thought, a random thought I had.
No, I was about to say, what was the connection? Like,
I mean, just like alienation, you know, kind of darker themes, brotherhood, you know, they had, the two were brothers, you know, dark, moody. But for some reason, those movies like have a very loyal audience, and I feel like Nightmare Before Christmas has one of the most loyal audiences out there.
Dude, I love this movie.
Yeah,
I don't even feel like I'm the kind of person who's supposed to like these movies, and I like this movie.
I love it.
It's one of Tim Burton's best.
It's like, really. You know what I didn't like? That what was that newer one that felt like it was trying to play off of this?
Coraline.
Like I couldn't sit through that. And James and the Giant Peach, I couldn't. I liked the book when I was younger, but I just couldn't tolerate the movie.
There's also Corpse Bride.
Box like. Trolls, guys. Box Trolls.
Did you see Box Trolls?
Oh my gosh! Watch the first 15 minutes, you'll be hooked. It's like really sad, dude. The trailer looks adorable. It's so sad. Like the first 15 minutes break your heart, and like it's beautiful. Just watch it. Watch it. It's like it'll. Guys, right now.
Look, I really want to know, and our listeners want to know. I want to, Lazavath, have you seen Box Trolls?
No, I haven't.
You're curious, aren't you?
A little bit, yeah.
Dude.
You know, look, everyone complains about spoilers on the internet and everything, but let's be real. If I got the biggest spoil on the internet, when I go see the movie, I'm not thinking of that spoiler all throughout the movie. So when it happens, I'm still shocked. So I'll still be surprised by Box Trolls. I want to know.
All right, so the first 15 minutes, I'll do this real quick because we know we got to end. There's this really evil guy, and he wants to be part of this like cheese eating club that's like the high society of the town. So he makes
Are you making a joke, or is it really a cheese eating club?
Cheese eating club, and okay. he makes up this story about Box Trolls stealing a child, and to get people thinking that Box Trolls are murdering kids. However, this child was adopted by the Box Trolls for unforeseen reasons, which you'll find out later. But the first 15 minutes, it's about this cute little kid growing up with these sweet Box Trolls. But during the whole part, these jerky guys are kidnapping them. and like taking them away. And so where there's once this like this huge grouping of box trolls when they went to bed, and over the years it shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. It's like breaking my heart is talking about. It's like I got goosebumps. It's like I love it. I love the
box. Is Box Trolls on DVD yet?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix already? Okay, yeah. Cool.
I mean, it's beautiful. I love it.
Nice.
Watch it.
Love me some Box Trolls.
All right, guys.
John, Lazabeth, you have listened to us talk a lot about older Christmas movies in the last 20 minutes. What are your feelings about these older Christmas movies? Do you feel like we have bestowed amazing knowledge on our listeners who maybe haven't seen these?
No, I think you certainly enlightened them, for sure.
We are enlightening. We're very enlightening.
Box Trolls.
Yeah. All right, guys. I think we reached that point in the podcast where we need to say goodbye. But before we do, are there any plugs we want to make?
Head to iTunes or Blog Talk Radio, but iTunes, you know, rate, review, share. If you have a friend that likes these kind of podcasts, you know, listen to them. We have a pretty good back catalog going on here. We always welcome more questions. Also check out Shark Dropper, any of their podcasts, and over to moviesfilmsandflicks.com to check out, you know, horror reviews, every reviews, best of lists, home alone theories. Just, you know, come check us out.
I'm good. You guys just got 100 watts of enlightenment from us.
Boom. Yeah.
All right, guys. For my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Kurt Russell.
And John Lovegood.
Floodlights of enlightenment.
I've been your host, John Lossow. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Oh, also, happy holidays. I think this will be out for Christmas. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Everything.
Happy Box Troll Day.
Yeah, that too. All right, guys. Stay safe. Later.
We're above the target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.